I'm Ben Kiefer with River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Today you're listening to an encore edition of the program. Joining me as a co-host for this half hour, actually in the studio with me, my dog, Lucy. Well, she gets to be in because it's all about dogs this hour. Our relationships with dogs, a relationship that has developed between humans and canines over tens of thousands of years. Lucy's going to be quiet, evidently. She's the strong, silent type. Matt Hill is with us in the studio as well. He's assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa. Welcome to you, Matt Hill.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Matt Hill specializes in examining how humans interact with the environment and have integrated ecology historically. But occasionally, I understand, Matt, you teach a class on the relationship between humans and dogs.
Yeah, I teach a class called Our Life with Dogs, which looks at all aspects of how dogs have evolved with us, how they play a role in our different aspects of our lives, and how we kind of view ourselves through dogs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about that in a moment. I want to reach out to our listeners in the meantime and have you help us out because we really want to talk, I guess, a little academically about this relationship, but also from you. We want to challenge you in five words or less to crystallize, what does your dog mean to you? Five words or less. What does it mean to you? Perhaps you want to bring up a little picture, paint a little picture with those five words. Perhaps you want to make a list with those five words. I don't know. Do something that tells us, in five words or less, what your dog means to you. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can post it on our Facebook page, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. I suppose you could also call us, 1-866-780-9100. So, Matt Hill, as an anthropologist, tell us, how and when did this special relationship with dogs, when did it start?
Well, this is actually a very current topic. There's been a lot of research in the last few years. As far as we can tell, the first dogs evolved out of wolves. That seems pretty well established. And certainly by about 14,000 years ago, we see dogs across much of the old world, from Europe to the Near East to China to Siberia.
Mm, we see in evidence, archaeological evidence.
Correct. Okay. Correct. We find dog skeletons. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, in the last 5 or 6 years, there's a greater appreciation that this relationship and the appearance of dogs from wolves probably started maybe 20,000 years before that. So about 30 to 35,000 years ago, we start to see kind of wolf-dog hybrids that have a lot of physical traits, genetic traits, and perhaps behavioral traits that are more like dogs than wild wolves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the beginning, when this started off, what do we think was their the nature of their relationship with us? What did we find interesting in them, and what did they find in the relationship that was good for them?
Well, traditionally, we've thought about the appearance of dogs as we do kind of breeds, that humans went out, found wolves, and selectively breed them to create dogs. That's probably an oversimplification. And if anything, our understanding now suggests that wolves probably were attracted to us. And so dog is probably a self-dimensional species in which certain wolves were attracted to human settlements, probably for food, like eating our trash. And over time, there was a selection. Those dogs that had certain genetic and behavioral traits that didn't make them run away like a normal wolf would when around humans got more food. They could eat out of the dump longer. And over probably thousands of years, this made a very tame wolf. And in fact, it wasn't just a tame wolf. They became a dog. They started to have the genetic traits, the shape of the snout, perhaps the floppy ears, the curly tail. Those physical traits probably came from a selection unintentionally on humans' parts from wolves trying to kind of live alongside of us.
Okay, so they're at the edge of the camp or living on the fringes in the beginning. What do we humans like about that? Do they provide protection?
At the beginning, what's kind of ironic is we probably hated it. You know, wolves are large carnivore. They were dangerous. They were competitors for food. They would try to eat, you know, the same things we ate. So my guess is for a long time, humans didn't see any benefit to having these kind of tame wolves around and probably tried to run them off or get them out of their lives because they were a threat. And that's what I think is the interesting question about this is why did the humans change their attitude towards these animals?
Mm. What do you think are some answers or an answer?
Well, that's a tough part. I think what you saw is you just became – on one level, the wolf kind of tamed itself to live with us. Probably at the same time, we're taming ourselves, not to be afraid of the wolf or this dog, this early dog, but to see it as a possible companion. And this takes a long time. This is not in a person's lifetime, right. Not generations, a very long time. And eventually, probably inadvertently, you started to see some things. It probably started barking when other predators came by. So you started to say, well, it could be a watchdog. Certainly, wolves were great hunters. And early humans probably saw that as a potential. And if it was a tame enough animal, they could bring it in. Mm. And then there's, as best as I can describe it, is a genetic hardwiring for us to like dogs. That's the best way I can – it's not a scientific answer, but it's my personal kind of view.
Right. So in early societies, before we even get to the companionship aspect of this, in early societies, what would dogs integrated into a early human society have done? What roles would they have played?
Probably the very earliest dogs played no role other than kind of a nuisance. There's lots of kind of village dogs across the world that just kind of walk around, dig into trash, you know, get the occasional pet or kick depending on the person. But I think they were just kind of in our universe. Mm-hmm. But by about 14,000 years ago, we start to see emotional attachments with them. People start to bury them alongside humans.
That's how we know that there's emotional attachments.
Yeah.
The evidence. So we have human skeletal remains right next to dogs.
Yeah. No, there's a site by the name of Angazel in the Near East in which it's about 12,000 years ago. And there's an older woman, probably died of natural causes, that was buried with a little puppy. And it wasn't just that it was put in with there. The puppy was laid by the woman's head and the woman's hand was placed over the dog's back as if a pet, as if petting the dog. That is not some ceremonial thing. That's, in my opinion, evidence of a personal attachment. There's a connection, an intimacy there that isn't just simply that these dogs were tools to be used for hunting or carrying pack animals, but they meant something.
Okay, so we domesticated a lot of different types of animals depending on the society that we were in. You know, animals to run a mill to mill our grain, for instance, and other animals just simply to raise and eat. This is an animal we raised, it seems, primarily to be a companion.
Well, I think the dog across cultures and through times have always served lots of functions. They've always probably been a companion. There's a friendliness and intimacy bringing the dog into the house and home. But also they would have been used as pack animals. Native North Americans on the Great Plains often used dogs to carry teepees and supplies. Mm-hmm. In the American Southwest, Puebloan Indians used dogs. Actually, they had a special breed with long hair that they actually sheared like a sheep and spun cloth out of.
Hmm.
Obviously, the Arctic peoples, Native peoples, used it, the husky, as a form of transport. And you see this across. They are used in ceremonies and rituals. They're used to hunt, to protect in war and in peacetime.
Mm-hmm. So when we think about these early dogs, we don't think about the anything from the Chihuahuas to the Great Danes that we have today. Well, what would those breeds came later? What would the earliest dogs look like in the dogs that we have here today? Which breeds look like early dogs to you?
Well, what's interesting is even early on, perhaps as old as 8,000 or 10,000 years ago, there were different kinds of dogs. There were big dogs, kind of husky dogs. Husky-sized dogs. There was kind of medium-sized dogs, maybe collies. And then later, perhaps 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, you start to see like little dogs like what we think of as like lap dogs. So there's always been different breeds is the best word for it. There's different kinds of dogs, and they likely serve different functions.
Okay. You mentioned that the open question here, the burning question, or are there others that puzzle us about this relationship when we're trying to is why dogs were integrated. Any other burning questions that you have that you find fascinating when you teach this course? If you've just joined us, Matt Hill is with us, assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa. Occasionally teaches a class on the relationship between humans and dogs. What else do you bring up in the class?
Well, I like to. What fascinates me personally is the different ideas and relationships we have with dogs. I mean, lots of people, millions of people, have dogs as pets and treat them as part of the family. But there are the same societies in Iowa City. You could even say it. There's people who love their dogs and treat them like humans. And then there are people who abuse dogs or neglect dogs. And this difference of attitudes of how we can treat the same species fascinates me. Dogs kind of can be used to understand all different aspects of our society and our thinking and our personal relationships.
Do we in our culture in North America have one of the more especially dog-loving cultures? Or
I don't know. I mean, I think you have for 8 to 10,000 years, people intentionally burying dogs and involving some sort of ceremony, having them in their houses, having them serve probably no practical function other than companionship for millennia. And so the other aspect I think is interesting is this seems cross-cultural. You know, Americans have clearly a close relationship, but so do other people in the world today. And interestingly, so do people thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm. I wonder when we Lucy's laying down here as we have this conversation, calmly listening to us talk about her and her ilk and this relationship that she and her fellow dogs have with us humans. But I wonder, those of us who love dogs, our companions to dogs, often look at dogs, talk to dogs in a way that I wonder, do we attribute too much to the relationship from their side? We have this intense emotional relationship. What is their relationship to us like? What does it feel like to a dog? An answer we can't really know, but what do you think?
It's hard to say. I think there's clearly several levels about from the dog's perspective about us. I mean, one of the things we have to understand is that dogs really understand us. They're one of the few animals that look us in the eye. They follow us. They follow our facial expressions. They're extremely good at predicting what we're going to do. They really understand us, and it arises from thousands of years living alongside of us. So they understand us quite well. But they certainly, I think the more people kind of look at their intellect, their abilities, that they kind of think deeply about us and feel deeply about us. And there's a connection there. I mean, anybody who looks at their dog and see their dog wagging their tail when they come home, it's not just they want food. Although there's that too. The pet in today's society has a very good life, and they're using people spend thousands of dollars to feed them, to take care of them. These are not running around having to make their own life.
Right. They've got a good deal. Matt Hill is with us, anthropologist at the University of Iowa, talking about the relationship between humans and dogs. And the last half hour, we had that conversation with the Marine Sergeant Ross Gunlock, and a couple of things really jumped out about what you're saying and connected with what he said. He said in Afghanistan, when he had his military service dog, Casey, his quote was, "We were pretty much one." That's a remarkable statement, and yet a statement that so many of us can understand. And yeah. Horse owners could make the same statement, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people who have cats and love cats have the same way. Humans are very interesting, as we certainly can make very close contact and connections with other humans, but we're one of the few species that seems to be able to do that with kind of non-humans, and dogs are one of them. We bring them into our lives and make them an intimate part of all of our relationships.
I asked at the beginning of the program, five words or less, what does your dog mean to you? Julia on our Twitter gave us a tweet, says, unconditional love and acceptance. That's at the heart of it, isn't it?
No, that's
regardless of what we've done as in our families, right? This is the one warm body in our family who will not be, you know, saying, well, you didn't take out the trash or something like that. They will always be glad to see you when you walk in the door.
Absolutely. And I think that's that trait, you know, in my talking with students and other people about this, comes up again and again. This unconditional love is so valuable. And I think it's interesting that I don't know how important that was in the past. There's some evidence, even in the U.S. over the last three or four decades, that our relationship with dogs have kind of changed and evolved. And this emotional attachment, this companionship, this love, unconditional love, seems to be perhaps growing in importance.
How do you see? What do you see going on that tells you that?
Well, you know, we've always had dogs in the U.S. I mean, there's been millions of dogs throughout our history that have been part of us. But we see things like the amount of spending we're doing on dogs, not just for food and healthcare, but buying them presents. A shocking number of people throw little birthday parties for their dogs. There's stores where you can get cakes and clothing. There's a greater increase in people naming their dogs with human names rather than like Fido or Spot.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a trend when, you know, these animals pass, the emotional toll that it's taking on many of us appears greater more recently.
In fact, I knew a gentleman years ago who had a dog, and he said he would never own a dog again. And I said, do you have a bad experience? He said, no, it was the opposite. He said, that dog was such a part of my life. It took me so long to grieve and get over that dog. I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah. I mean, I think many people view them as children in every sense of the word.
Let's talk about how this, generally speaking, this human-dog relationship may be different than the human-cat relationship, the other domesticated animal that we keep in our home as a companion. But they're very different, aren't they?
Oh, no, they are very different. I mean, there's one of the things I always talk about my students, one of the ways you can tell that the dog-human relationship is different than the cat-human relationship is that there's been relatively limited research on human-cat relationship.
Really? I wonder why that would be.
I think because dogs are so important. And, you know, scientists are part of our culture and reflect our ideas and values just like everyone else. I mean, one of the things that I find interesting about cats that differ from dogs is they're domesticated, but they're actually not that different if you look at them genetically, if you look at them physiologically, their body, if you look at them behaviorally, than wild cats. In one sense, a domesticated cat is more or less a wild cat that lives in your house. They have all the same behaviors and traits, both good and bad, that many wild cats do.
Mm-hmm.
And they just haven't undergone the dramatic change in behavior and in their body and their biology that dogs have undergone. And they're kind of really, on one sense, a much more wild animal living with us. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, we can talk about dog and cat people, but they are different. They act different. They respond to us differently than dogs, and I think our relationship shows that.
Are you saying that they've just had less time with humans to develop, to change, to evolve with us?
This is the interesting thing. Not necessarily. They've been there's probably good evidence for them evolving in the 8,000 to 9,000 year range. So they've been they're quite an early domesticate. It's shorter than the dog. But it's still quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. an author I interviewed here, I guess it's a couple years back, fascinating book, The Story of Edgar Sattell. I don't know if you know of this book, but it is it's a novel created by David Robleski, and he has one of his characters creating the future dog, a dog he's trying to perfect breeding a dog that is even more of a perfect companion. I wonder if you ever think, as an anthropologist who looks back at where dogs and humans, this relationship came forward, if we can cast that into the future and in what dogs of the future may be like, because we've dramatically changed them.
No, and that's one of the amazing things. I mean, all the breeds of dogs that we kind of think about are really appearing in the last 150 years or so. They're very recent in terms of the breeds that we kind of interact with. And dogs are the most physically diverse and to some extent genetically diverse mammal that we know of. It's or one of the animals, in fact. I have no idea. Our ability to kind of make the dog kind of fit our ideas of what it should look like, for big or small or coloration, is pretty amazing.
Okay. We'll find out. Maybe there'll be a talk show in a couple hundred years when you and I are not here. Talk about how dogs have evolved so quickly. Thank you very much. Matt Hill with us, assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa, occasionally teaches a class on the relationship between humans and dogs. Matt Hill, thank you very much for coming into the studio and joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese, the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.